Hello and thanks for tuning in. My guest today is Griff Parry from Meter. Griff, you've done some research with PwC about software costs or IT costs. What did you find, very briefly?
Well, we found that there's a big move towards usage-based pricing in software, and that move is associated with high levels of revenue leakage, which is revenue that should be invoiced but isn't. And the numbers are really significant. So 4-7% of revenues are being lost by businesses with those type of pricing models.
Why is revenue being lost? Well, let's go back a bit. What is revenue loss? So we're talking about what, software companies losing revenue? Or?
So we're principally talking about software and technology companies, although it extends to other verticals too. And this is a problem that always exists, but becomes more acute as your pricing becomes more complex, particularly if you're beginning to introduce usage-based elements to the pricing, so like allowances and overages above them, et cetera. And what revenue leakage is money that you lose because you've earned it, you know, you're contractually owed it, you've delivered the service, but the amounts don't get on the bill, the full amounts don't get on the bill because of billing errors, essentially. So what it's not is about opportunity costs. So you can talk about, you could be making much more money if you changed your pricing. That's something different. That's pricing design and pricing strategy to sort of optimize results from what you're doing. But this is something much more painful because you've earned this money. You're just not collecting it because billing errors mean that the full amounts don't appear on the bill.
But in the technology business, one would expect them to understand numbers. I mean, why is there billing errors?
So there's three or four main reasons, and this is all sort of dull practical stuff about operationalizing businesses. I'll go through them one by one. So one is the full amount isn't charged on the bill because not all the usage is captured and delivered into the bill calculation process. So this might be a situation where people aren't recording the usage at all, which it happens surprisingly often. And to give you an example, you might have a system where your pricing is broadly fixed, but it has an allowance of usage. And if you exceed that usage, that allowance, you should pay overages. And so most of the revenues are fixed, but there should be like a small amount, like 10, 20% of overages. But the production systems aren't actually even recording the usage, so the usage isn't available. But what's more likely is that the usage is being recorded, but isn't being processed and presented to the bill calculation mechanism in the right way. And what that means is that there should be overages, but none are ever charged because there's no governance around it. So that's one. It's like the incomplete capture of usage that should impact billing. So that's thing one. Thing two, you're using out-of-date pricing in your bill calculations. So imagine a customer, they've been a customer of yours for a while. You agree a renewal, and the renewal involves a price increase. And the problem is that the contract is signed and then filed in a dusty drawer. And wherever you're calculating the bills, the pricing for that customer isn't updated so it's consistent with the new contract that's in the drawer. And that compounds and builds up. And so, you know, it's an obvious mistake which has material impact on the amount you're billing that customer and all the hard work of your sales teams and your legal teams to get that deal updated essentially goes to waste. So that's reason number two. Reason number three is there's a bill calculation mechanism, which sounds like a fancy word. I'll explain what I mean in a second. But there's a bill calculation mechanism that can't cope with the complexity that your pricing designs demand. And so the easy way to think about this is you're calculating prices in a spreadsheet, which happens a lot. And, you know, we all work with spreadsheets. There's only so much you can do before they sort of come up against the limits of what's possible. And so, and imagine a situation where you have, I don't know, 1,000 customers, and 40% of those customers have custom pricing. So there are specific pricing terms. And it's quite common that the specific pricing terms will actually involve a slightly different model. Like the what you're paying is calculated on a different metric, or that metric is combined with another metric, which isn't true of the next customer, et cetera. So you've already got a problem where that spreadsheet has to accommodate lots of variation on a row. And then you start getting into really complex formulas in the columns. And then eventually people go, oh, this doesn't work. And you're either making errors or you're having to introduce simplifications because you can't model it accurately enough in the spreadsheet. And so, you know, you can build a bespoke piece of software to do all that, which is very expensive. But whatever your bill calculation mechanism is, if it's not up to the job, you start making errors or you make simplifications, which means that you're not putting the full amount onto the bill that should be. So that's the third thing. I'll just chuck a fourth one in for luck.
You did, didn't you? Because I knew you said four, and then we've got the three. Is there another one?
I like this. Well, I mean, there's more, but these are the four big ones I like talking about. Entitlement issues. So classic case, you've got a customer who's on a trial, a free trial, and they're using your product and they're loving it. And then they reach the end of the trial period and they keep using and they increase their usage, but your systems haven't logged the fact that they're no longer on a free trial. So there's a bunch of usage that should be rated and driving a bill, which doesn't. You get a no invoice or a zero invoice. So it's those things. And they're really frustrating for a business because this is money you have earned and you've paid for the service, like you've borne the cost of delivery, but you're just not charging the full amount.
Okay. You mentioned, well, there's one thing I wanted to pick up before I ask you specifically about the research, that this is something that not only applies in the sort of like the software sector, but also it could be, this type of pricing could be applied in other verticals. I guess, as you know, more and more businesses are sort of providing technology powered services, or data, or just data, you know, that they've collected, and you know, it's something that is definitely on a rise. So, you know, I think McKinsey years ago wrote, every company should be a software company, but it's really hard, you know, because you just can't hire the software developers, right? You know, so I guess this is something that applies to any business that is trying to build out a kind of a new revenue stream that's technology led, as in software led.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, a couple of things. So the reason that software and technology are at the epicenter of this is there's a very dynamic environment for pricing design and pricing strategy and software and tech. So we're moving from the SaaS world where essentially businesses were paying for access largely on the basis of seats. And then there's this sea change move towards usage. And there's lots of drivers, but the big sexy one is AI, because people are adopting AI, integrating AI features into their products. And they're having to adapt their pricing strategies to accommodate them, because the cost model for those AI features is different. Basically, the use of AI drives variable costs. And so people start moving towards usage pricing to cover those costs and control their margins. So it's very, very dynamic environment in software and tech around pricing. And that's why people are really thinking about this. It's like, oh, wow, our business models are changing. And we need to, so we're changing the way we're pricing, and we need to make sure that we can operationalize this. And people start worrying about revenue leakage, et cetera. But then there's a few other effects. So software is eating the world, as you mentioned. and software or software driven businesses tend to disrupt sort of other verticals. And so you're seeing the same technology and systems and tooling, and also the same pricing approach is being brought into other areas as software disrupts other sectors. And it's worth just chucking in another thing is usage pricing isn't new. I mean, there are a bunch of verticals out there where, which I would describe as usage native, which have always priced based on usage. So utilities, for example, or logistics. And so they've got sort of established legacy tooling providers that help companies bill effectively. But you're seeing this massive innovation in software, and the tooling that's being built on this and the approaches that are being innovated in software are beginning to make these other usage native verticals think again about how they could modernize the systems and platforms that their businesses are based on. So there's a lot of change in a lot of places, but the epicenter is the software and tech world because of that dynamic environment for pricing design.
So in terms of the research that you did with PwC, what was the figure, what's the figure that stood out the most for you?
Well, there was one figure that that stood out, but which was expected. So there were two parts to the research. So one is, what is in practice the uptake of these more complex pricing strategies, particularly around usage? And the other was, how much are people worried about revenue leakage in this context? So taking the first one, like this was, it was interesting research because this was 350 plus software leaders. And we found that 52% of the companies that they work for are operating usage pricing models. So either hybrid models that combine sort of fixed and variable elements or more pure play usage elements. Now that figure wasn't a surprise to me at all because I work there all the time, but it's nice to have proper, hard, updated data talking about this. Like the majority of companies now operate usage models. And just to emphasize, they operate them. They're not trialing or experimenting. This is a core part of their business model and how they do business. So that figure stood out, but wasn't surprising. The other figure is about the extent of leakage and how much people worry about it. And I think the figure was 72%. So 72% of companies that have usage pricing models worry about revenue leakage and don't know how much they have. So it's a thing for them. You know, they know that it's material enough to worry about. They don't know how much of a problem it is because it is one of those known unknowns, as Rumsfeld would have said.
I mean, you know, you mentioned AI earlier about it's because of the way AI is basically expensive, and so once you start using it, you've got to pay, you know, it's going to cost more and things like that. Are you seeing any interest in sort of value-based pricing?
Yes. So I'm not a pricing strategist, but I spend a lot of my life talking to really good ones. And so I think you should always be looking to make your pricing as value-based as possible, as opposed to being cost-based. But there are various different ways of doing it. So I tend to use the term usage-based as a catch-all, but actually within it, there are different variations that move you closer and closer to value. So like at one end of the extreme, you've got pricing that is absolutely based on usage. So like AWS, you're using an infrastructure. Mm. What you pay doesn't really have anything to do with the value that you get from using that infrastructure. The same thing would be true of tokens when you're using a foundational AI model. But then better, I would say better. I think more promising pricing increases the connection with value. So you start moving towards valuable actions, pricing based on a valuable action or a value proxy. So if you were a an AI company that provides automated call center agents. It's like, how many phone calls do I process, or how many phone calls do I process without human intervention? And then at the far end of the scale, there's genuine outcome-based pricing, which is, you know, you as the vendor are paid on the basis, or you get a share of the outcome that the customer realizes, the value that they realize. No, I think it's quite rare, that pricing, because there's an attribution issue. It's like, how much does my tool contribute to your business outcome? But it does happen. I mean, that's how payments works. It's like, you know, the payment company will take a percentage of a transaction. That's a share of the value.
I've never considered that, actually, but you're right, aren't you? isn't it?
But generally, I think if you can link your pricing to value, it's better for you. You're more likely to extract willingness to pay and value that your customers get. But there's lots of variation, and it slightly depends on the product you're selling.
And I guess as you move down that route, having an understanding of usage becomes very, very important.
Absolutely, and you know, you don't necessarily have to price on usage, but you should definitely be tracking your usage along various vectors, because it gives you strong clues as to how customers are using your product, how they're getting value from it. I mean, good usage-based pricing basically involves, there has to be a simplification, because it needs to be easy for the customer to understand and to predict. And so you're looking for a small number of usage vectors to connect your pricing to. And what good looks like is a usage vector that the customer strongly associates with successful outcomes themselves. So that's the value proxy, or the valuable action. And so if the customer looks at it and goes, oh, wow, I used 100 of these this month, that's great. That means that I must have been pretty successful. That's what you want. What you don't want is, why have we used 100 of these rather than 50 last month? Something must be wrong. So I would say people should be, functionally, I'm a product person. You should just be looking at the usage of your product, because it gives you strong clues about what is working well and badly about it. But then you should be looking at which are the best usage vectors to connect pricing to, and the best ones are the ones that the customer themselves associate with value.
And finally, because we've only got a few minutes left, so you have said this just now, but if we were to look very specifically at the benefits to the customer from a customer perspective, I mean, they're buying usage. I mean, as you said, you know, if it's 100 widgets or 100 whatever transactions that you've done on this thing, you know what that is, so you can look at that month on month and understand what is happening. So there is definitely a benefit in tightening things up, both from the supplier of the software, the vendor, and from the customer's perspective, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, so if I answer your question by slightly elliptically, where we started, revenue leakage happens. It's a systems and controls issue. It happens because your systems and controls aren't well adapted to your business model. But the benefits of fixing those systems and controls aren't limited to just eliminating revenue leakage. They also have, and this is what triggered me to say this, real benefits in terms of your customer relationships, because it means that you have data about the customer's usage and billing easily to hand, and probably available in near real time. So, you know, you're recalculating the bill every hour or more frequently. And if you present that information to the customer, that helps build trust with the customer. So, you know, they get an invoice at the end of the month, and it's got a really detailed breakdown of what they used and why that converts into the number at the bottom of the bill. But you also make sure that all the same information is available to the salespeople or the customer success people that they talk to. So those people always seem well informed, and the customer responds well to that. And even better, you make all that information available in a dashboard in your own product, so the customer can go and look at it at any given moment. So Yes, billing is a banana skin, but if you do it well, it also becomes an opportunity to build trust.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.